after the first three verses, reciting those before Lord Jagannath, Mahaprabhu will recite his fourth verse. Now, they're moving up in intimacy with Krishna in his relationship with Jagannath. First, Namo Mahabhananaya. Basically, Krishna in this world, and then Jayati, Jayati, Devaki, Nandana, So, Devo, Devaki, Nandana, So, how Krishna's body is Kamalango. He's a person. Yes, he's a person. And in the third verse, summarizing his different pastimes, ending with how he increases the desires for intimacy with the Braja Gopis by his beautiful, sweet, smiling face, Kama Devan and Susmita, Sri Muka, Mukena, Vrajapura Vanitam of the Gopis, the intimacy of his dealings with Gopis. So one almost would expect Mahaprabhu's next prayer to be, please allow me to be there with the Braja Gopis, something like that. But actually, and quite surprisingly, and quite wonderfully, Mahaprabhu offers his next prayer as, Naham vipro natanarapati nabivaiso nasudro. Naham vani na sagrihapatir no vinishtriyativa. Kintu prodyan nikla paramananda punam ritabde. Gopi bhata parakamalayo dasa dasa no das. So he's defining himself and what he wants to be here. He's expressing, Mahaprabhu is expressing his desire. First, what he's not. Naham vipro. I am not a Brahmin. Mahaprabhu is the greatest Brahmin. But that, he is saying, that is not actually me. Nata Narapati. Narapati means a king, a kshatriya. Napi vaisho. Nor am I a mercantile man. Nasudro. Nor a sudra. Naham Varni. So he's gone through the different varnas. I'm not a Brahmin, I'm not a Kshatriya, a Vaishya, or a Sudra. Naham Varni. A Varni means a Brahmachari. Brahmachari, because a Brahmachari can be in any of the different varnas. I'm not a Brahmachari. Grihapati, this is not who I am. I am not a householder. No vanashto, vanishto. I am not one who is situated in the forest, a vanaprastha, or a yati. Yati means a sannyasi. I am not any of these things. Because bhakti begins, as we've been saying, bhakti begins, and the essence of true bhakti is acting on the platform with no false ego. So all these different identities based on the body, and even the mentality that the body is based on, Mahaprabhu was saying, this is not me. He's brought us to the position of appreciating Krishna's dealings, very sweet and intimate dealings with the Braja Gopi and Gopis in the last prayer. And now he's expressing his own desire. Removal of this identity. Any identity having to do with the body and the mind. Sarva upari vinirmuktam tat paratvena nirmalam. So this is the removal part I don't want to be this. I don't want to be that. And it's so important to deal with the removal part in our own cases properly. Because there's such a strong tendency to think about our lack and want something that we think we lack that will help us make us more complete, even in our devotional service. But no, nothing on the mental or physical level. The gross bodily or the subtle bodily, we can't identify with any of that. This is what Mahaprabhu was saying. So then, what is he desiring to identify with? Kintu prodyan nikala paramananda purnamritabdi. With that brilliant, complete ocean of nectar who is filled with transcendental bliss, that person who is Gopi Bharta, the supreme person who maintains the gopis. Bharta means the maintainer of the gopis, but it also can be mean he who is maintained by the gopis. Gopi Bharta Parakamalaya, his lotus feet, Dasa Dasa and Adas. This is the identity of the soul fixed in his actual relationship with Krishna beyond the gross and subtle body. This is Mahaprabhu expressing his own desire. And I am the Das and a Das and a Das, the servant of the servant of the servant. I am not all those things. I am the servant of he who is being maintained by the gopis or he who is maintaining the gopis. I'm the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. I am not there showing my bright smile in front of Krishna. Here I am. I'm your servant. No. I'm the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. No false ego whatsoever. This is Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Gopi Bharta Parakamalaya Dasa Dasana Dasa. Before one worships the deity as a servant of his spiritual master, one recites this verse. I am not a Brahmin. I am not a Kshatriya. And this is what he's saying to Lord Jagannath. I am not a Vaishya or a Sudra, nor I am a Brahmachari, a householder, a Vanaprastha or a Sannyasi. Well then what am I? What do I identify with? Because false ego gives us a false sense of I-ness. Ego means I-ness. That feeling that we all have of I. The impersonalists take that feeling of I and identify with everything. So hum. I am that. That feeling of I, ego, and identify with all in existence. Material, Buddhist, all material. Impersonalist, all in spiritual existence. So where should we place that feeling of I? So Mahaprabhu was saying that not anything to do with the body, not anything to do with the mind. I identify myself only, not partially. I'm also this, I'm also that, I'm also an American, I'm also an Australian, I'm also a householder, little bits of this and little bits of that. I'm a teacher, I'm a guru, I'm a this, I'm a that, I'm a disciple. So many different identities. I'm a 59-year-old, a male, a balding old man who wears thick multifocus glasses. Who at least doesn't have to worry about combing his hair anymore. I identify myself only as the servant of the servant of the servant, Dasa Dasana Das, of the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna, the maintainer of the gopis. No other identity other than being a servant of the servants of Krishna. This is Krishna consciousness. He is like an ocean of nectar. He's the sweetest of the sweet in every way. And this is what Mahaprabhu has just been showing. And he is the cause of universal transcendental bliss. And when we connect to Krishna without false ego, we're all connecting with Krishna anyway. It's unavoidable. He's the absolute truth. There's nothing except him in existence. Even we are his part of his energy. We have to connect with Krishna. It's unavoidable. But when we connect with Krishna in this way, as a servant, then there's bliss only and completely. And he is always existing with brilliance. So this is Mahaprabhu's desire. When I studied this, I found it quite astounding, because you want it's going up, ascending order. And you think that the next step in ascending order is something very different from what it turns out to be. It turns out to be going down to the very bottom and being a servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of those who serve Krishna. So, and Gopi Bharta again could mean the maintainer of the gopis, or the gopis who main servant of Krishna. Because Krishna without Krishna, the gopis can't exist. But it also, the nature of the love of Vrindavan is without the gopis, Krishna can't exist. So although he, not they, are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there's a sampradaya in Vrindavan, an upper sampradaya in the Gaudiya line, that they see Srimati Radharani as the Supreme Personality, basically. And you can see how that goes, because she is Radhe Radhe, and everyone serves Radharani is more powerful than Krishna, but she is yet the Ladini Shakti Asman. It's Krishna who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Srimati Radharani is the Supreme Energy of Krishna, his Ladini Shakti. So Krishna maintains the gopis. His existence, when he leaves Vrindavan, practically they cease to exist in their ecstasy. And when Krishna seems to leave Vrindavan, Krishna practically ceases to exist too. He's crying and crying and crying. His heart is here. He cannot take a step out of Vrindavan, in fact, because the gopis have captured him. They're maintaining him. Now, this concept of being the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, not being even a direct servant of Krishna, is quite wonderful. One place where it's mentioned, also, Mahaprabhu quoted the Mukundamala Stotra, the third text, but also in the 25th text, listen to what word comes up again and again. I'll read the Sanskrit. Ma janmanam phalamidam madukaitabare mat prataniya maranugrahaya eshava twad britya britya paritaraka britya britya brittasya britya itimam smaralokanata. Britya. What does Britya mean? Britya means servant. Britya Britasya. The servant of the servant. Twad Britya Britta Pradicharaka Britya Britya Britasya Britya Itimam Smaralokanatha. O enemy of Madhu and Kaitava. Here's the translation. O Lord of the universe, the perfection of my life, and the most cherished mercy you could show me would be for you to consider me the servant of 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 your servant. Seven. And here's, Srila Prabhupada wrote commentaries on the first six I think, 6 verses of Mukunda Mala Stotra, and Satsup Maharaj wrote the others. His comment is quite sweet, quite wonderful. This verse is startling for its repetition of the word servant 7 times. One can almost picture all the servants of the Lord who Kula Shekara wishes to serve, because Maharaj Kula Shekara is the author. Direct servants of Lord Krishna are Srimati Radharani or Lord Balaram and the other gopis and cowherd boys. Some of the gopis and cowherd boys are assistants to the direct servants. Amongst these assistants are the Manjaris who help Radharani serve Krishna and who, according to her, experience a happiness even greater than hers. The Vaishnava spiritual masters, especially those in the Madhurya Ras, serve the gopis, and each spiritual master is being served by his disciples. In the modern age, Lord Krishna appeared as Lord Chaitanya, who was served directly by the 6 Goswamis of Vrindavan, and these 6 Goswamis also took disciples, such as Krishnadas Kaviraj, who in turn accepted disciples. And His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, is in the 11th spiritual generation of that Chaitanya Sampradaya. So the phrase Twad Britya Britya Paricharaka Britya Britya Britasya Britya is not only pleasing poetry, but it is an accurate description of the parampara. Each devotee is serving a previous servant of the Lord. To consider oneself a servant of all the Vaishnavas and to put their foot dust on one's head is not demeaning. It is the best way to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. Prahlad Maharaj told his father that unless one humbly serves the Vaishnavas and bathes in the dust of their lotus feet, one can never attain devotional service to Krishna. King Kulashekar says that if the Lord grants this prayer, it will be a display of His most cherished mercy. But why does he ask to be so many times removed from direct service? Why not ask simply to be the servant of the Lord? One reason is that the Supreme Lord does not accept direct service without service to His servants. As Krishna states in the Adi Purana, Ye me bhakta jana parta na me bhaktas chate jana mad bhakta nam chaye bhaktas te me bhakta. My dear Partha, those who say they are my devotees are not my devotees, but those who claim to be devotees of my devotees are actually my devotees. The pure devotee's chief aim is to please his worshipable Lord, and a wise Vaishnava knows what will please him best, becoming the servant, many times removed, of the Lord's bona fide servants. It is because the servants of God are so dear to the Lord that one can please Him best by pleasing them. Srila Prabhupada compared the process to an ordinary person's attempt to please a great man. Normally, an ordinary man cannot even approach the great man. But if by good fortune he is able to please the great man's pet dog, then he can quickly achieve the favor of the celebrated person. Another reason a devotee wishes to serve through other devotees is that he is naturally humble. He wants to take that place below rather than push himself forward. He wants to serve all the devotees or even worship the place where they have walked. The genuine devotee does not rashly presume that he is a member of the inner circle of the Lord's most dear ones. Lord Chaitanya has advised us that if we really wish to chant the holy name constantly, we should consider ourselves lower than the straw in the street, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer respects to others. We should not only recognize devotees, but all living. We should serve not only recognized devotees, but all living entities by giving them Krishna consciousness. Adi, could you hand out the sheet for this? And Prabhu, where's the... Bhagavad Gita, I think it's 2.2. Is that right? Short by Prabhupada. while we're handing it out, I'd like to remind the devotees of a very important comment that Srila Prabhupada made. He said that before he went to the West, he was reading the Bhagavad Gita commentary on Vyavya Satmika Bhuti, Bhagavad Gita 241. And he was reading the commentary of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And he said when he read that commentary, he was struck by it, and he remembered again his Guru Maharaj's order, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, to preach in the West, and that desire became still more solidified. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, in the same mood of Mahaprabhu, and the same mood as King Kulasekhar, to that verse, which is resolute intelligence. Excuse me. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose, and their aim is one, O beloved child of the Kurus. The intelligence of those who are irresolute is many branched. So what is the aim? What is the vyadvya satmika buddhi? What is the fixed determination of the devotee on the path? So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, of all kinds of intelligence, the best intelligence focused on bhakti is the best is intelligence focused on bhakti yoga. In bhakti yoga, one's intelligence becomes single-pointed or fixed in determination. One thinks, the instructions of my spiritual master to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead by chanting, remembering, serving his feet, and so on, are my only sadhana, my only sadhya, my only livelihood. I am incapable of giving up these instructions either in the stage of practice or in the stage of perfection. They alone are my object of desire and my only responsibility. Beside them, I can desire no other responsibility, not even in my dreams. It is all the same to me whether I feel happy or unhappy, or whether my material existence is eradicated or not. No false ego. This is the point about bhakti. This is the point about braja bhakti, or half the point. No false ego allowed, and the other half is one has to love in a specific mood of complete love, like the residents of Vrindavan do. So let's hear Prabhupada's lecture.
We cannot accept anyone's knowledge. This is very important. This is called parampara system. This is the succession. We receive knowledge perfectly from the Supreme Bhagavan. And if I receive the knowledge from Bhagavan, and if I distribute the same knowledge as Bhagavan has said, without any interpretation of my teaching policy, then the knowledge which I distribute, that is not the perfect. I may not be perfect, but the knowledge is also strong if I present it as it is, without any interpretation. Then what I give you, that is perfect. It is very easy to understand. I've been several times. Just like a peon has brought a money order for you, $1,000. So he is giving you. So you cannot say, here is a peon, he is a poor man, how you can give me $1,000? He is not giving. The money is sent by somebody else, he is simply handing you. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Amar Agai Guru Haiya, Taro Sadhu, Taro Ajit. He's asking everyone to become a spiritual master. So how everyone can become spiritual master. A spiritual master has sufficient knowledge and so many other qualifications. No. Even without any qualification, one can become spiritual. How? The process is, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Amara Gnana, on my order. That is a crucial point. One does not become spiritual master by his own wings. That is not spiritual. He must be ordered by superior authority. Then he speaks. Amara, just like in our case, our superior authority, our spiritual master, he ordered me that you just try to preach this gospel, whatever you have learned from me, in English. We have tried it, that's all. It is not that I am very much qualified. The only qualification is that I have tried to execute the order of superior authority. This is the secret of success. Vamosātmika buddhi rekeha kurunandana bahu-sākha jnantāsya buddhi yagvāvusāna bahu-sākha anantāsya vamosātmika buddhi, nishyātmika buddhi. If one has got unflinching faith in Krishna and Guru, Guru Krishna Kripa, we have to receive mercy both from the spiritual master and Krishna. We cannot jump over to Krishna. That is another nonsense. We must approach Krishna through Guru. That is parampara system. Krishna is not so cheap thing that you can jump over. Somebody says, no, why should I accept you? I can approach Krishna directly. No. Krishna does not accept such. Mag bhaktya puja bhudita. Krishna says, first of all, you become devotee of my devotee. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, gopi bhaktu padakamalayo dasu dasu dasanu dasu. I am the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. This is called parampara. You have to learn how to become servant of the servant of Krishna. The more you become in the lower position, servant, 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 100 times servant, servant, the more you are advanced. Here in this material world, everyone is trying to be master of the master. Just opposite. And the spiritual, the endeavor is to become servant's servant. This is the secret. Yasya devi para bhakti yatha devi tatha guru tasyai te kathita bhaktya prakashante mahatma. This is very interesting. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, in connection with the verse, dausātmika buddhi rekeha kurunandana nishyātmika buddhi. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that the instruction which I have received from my spiritual master, that is my life and so on. This is called nishyātmika, means assurance. Whatever I have received, the order from my spiritual master, that will give me salvation. Or even no salvation, it doesn't matter. A real devotee, a servant, does not expect anything, but tarjam, it is my duty. It is my duty. If one takes in such spirit, anasita karma palam tarjam karma karo vija. Tarjam, tarjam means it is my duty. It must be done. That's my duty. Without any reason, anasita karma palam. Karma phalam, every action, there is a result. Bad or good, it doesn't matter. There must be some result. So anasita karma phalam. Don't take shelter of the result of your work. Generally we work.
Don't take shelter of the result of your work. Don't try to enjoy the result of your work, and don't think that your shelter is your abilities born of mind and body, which are the result of the fruit of your, which are the result of your work. Don't take shelter of these things. Only one shelter. Only one shelter. So, there are so many verses that describe the servant of the servant of the servant and the gloriousness of it. Prahlad Maharaj says it, even Vritrasura says it. But in an effort to move a little forward, we won't discuss this point further at the present, because it will come up automatically in the next class, the next section as well. So Mahaprabhu said this verse, but please deeply note, that in the progress up, Mahaprabhu reaches this position, which from the material eye seems to be the lowest, to become a servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, means the servant of the gopis who are serving Krishna. The material mind does not like this point at all. It doesn't like it. But let's hear what happens to Mahaprabhu, what Mahaprabhu does after. Please take out the sheet again, the second sheet, yes, on Chaitanya Charitamrita. So Mahaprabhu, maybe we can give a few different groups here so it can go quickly. Yes, just now coming. So having, this is text 81, having recited all these verses from scripture, the Lord again offered his obeisances. He was full-heartedly in the mood of a devotee, in the mood of teaching. He was full-heartedly making this prayer, knowing Krishna's position, making this prayer to serve Krishna's servants, servants of seven times in the Mukundamala verse. We're reading from 81. Huh? What does that one begin? Okay, we'll get there then. Having recited all these verses from scripture, the Lord again offered his obeisances and all the devotees. Because when Mahaprabhu did something, it was like when a huge boulder falls into a body of water, the whole body of water reacts. So Mahaprabhu's influence was so great. Excuse me? It's probably okay. So all the devotees were enwrapped in the mood that Mahaprabhu was also enwrapped in. So they also, with folded hands, also offered prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu danced and jumped high, he was roaring like thunder and moving in a circle like a wheel. He appeared like a circling firebrand. Whenever Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stepped, wherever Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stepped while dancing, the whole earth with its hills and seas appeared to tilt. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu danced, he displayed various blissful transcendental changes in his body. Remember, please, my dear devotees, please remember that these external symptoms are coming from the internal bhavana, the internal bhav, the internal mood of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. His external symptoms while dancing are extreme because his internal mood is extreme. He's starting to enter the deepest emotions He's starting to experience the emotions for which he came to this world as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his internal reasons for his advent. He's starting to experience that, and they are shocking. They're extreme. He displayed various transcendental changes in his body. Sometimes he appeared as though stunned. Sometimes the hair of his body stood on end. Sometimes he perspired. He cried, trembled, and changed colors. And sometimes he exhibited symptoms of helplessness, pride, exuberance, and then humility. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fell down with a crash while dancing, he would roll on the ground. At such times, it appeared that a golden mountain was rolling on the ground. Nityananda Prabhu would stretch out his two hands and try to catch the Lord when he was running here and there. He was in ecstasy before Lord Jagannath. Advaita Charja, in a different mood of ecstasy, would walk behind the Lord and loudly chant, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, again and again. And just to check the crowds from coming too near the Lord, they formed three circles. The first circle was guided by Nityananda Prabhu, who was Balaram himself, the possessor of great strength. All the devotees, headed by Kashishwara and Govinda, linked hands and formed the second circle around the Lord. These were Mahaprabhu's personal servants, these two. Maharaj Prataparudra. Just stop for one second. I would like to read a little bit about Mahaprabhu's dancing. This description of his dancing is from Mahaprabhu, after he had just started the Sankirtan movement and he was in Nabadweep. And please keep in mind that this is the external manifestation of the internal ecstasy that he's feeling. And we have to say, just imagine the intensity or the depth of his ecstasies. This is in Nabadweep. The word Govinda resounded in the four directions as Sachi's son danced in ecstasy. Everyone was chanting, Govinda, Govinda, Krishna.
Govinda,
that's a good idea. Govinda, Govinda. Okay. Overcome with the emotions of experiencing Abhina Tam Namane, all the devotees were in ecstasy because Mahaprabhu had turned up the heat. Everyone was boiling inside. The Lord's associates sang Hari and Ram. When Mahaprabhu wept, he wept for 3 hours. He fell to the ground. His hair no longer remained neatly bound. Here in Puri, there was no hair. But there in Nabadweep, his hair was beautiful hair was going everywhere. Only a person made of wood would not be overcome with ecstatic love and fall to the ground just by seeing Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu weep during the kirtan. At times, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would begin to laugh loudly in ecstasy. And then, thinking himself as a servant, he would forget his own glories. He would loudly sing the holy names, so loudly that the universe appeared to be breaking apart. Then, his body would become as heavy as the universe itself, and no one had the power to lift him. And sometimes he became lighter than a piece of cotton, and the devotees would happily carry him on their shoulders around as they chanted, and they would walk in the courtyard. And then the Lord would faint in ecstasy, and the frightened devotees would chant Hari Hari in his ear. Sometimes Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's whole body would begin to tremble and his teeth would chatter like a child in the cold winter. And sometimes the Ganga personified herself would begin to flow from his body in the form of perspiration. The Ganga moves very, very, very rapidly and it is full. And he would perspire like that. What emotions could be going on inside? What emotions? The only example, and why it is said that a material body cannot hold prema, it is like these are the emotions that are going on inside. Mahaprabhu's body was not material. But it's like if you take a jet engine, one of the big, big jet engines, and then put it, attach it to your bicycle. Something like that. The bicycle will just fall apart. Sometimes the Ganga would fall, personified, would flow from his body like perspiration. Sometimes his body burned with fever and dried up the sandalwood paste, anointing it. Sometimes he sighed so deeply that everyone fled to one side of the courtyard. And sometimes Mahaprabhu ran to catch the feet of the devotees and the Vaishnavas would flee in the four directions. Sometimes he would rest his back, this one's not clear, he would rest his back against Nityananda's body and then he would lift his feet. And he would look at everyone and smile. And understanding the hint, the devotees would plunder the priceless jewel of the dust of the Lord's lotus feet. Adwaita Charja would touch Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's feet and say, "Ah, ah, O thief, now I will rob you of all your power and your glory and your pride. Now it is mine." During kirtan, Mahaprabhu would roll on the ground as the devotees sung the glories of Krishna. And when Lord Chaitanya danced enthusiastically, the earth itself began to tremble and the devotees would flee in fear. And when the Lord danced sweetly and gracefully, all these different various moods and emotions would be rolling like waves through Mahaprabhu's body. And when he would dance sweetly and gracefully, he looked like the best of dancers, Natabara Krishna. And then he would roar, and it would be like millions of lions, and Mahaprabhu would protect his devotees' ears from shattering. And when he would walk, sometimes he did not touch the ground. And some saw this, and others had no power to see it. Overcome with ecstasy, Mahaprabhu would stare at the devotees sometimes with red eyes. And first frightened, and then laughing, the devotees would run. Lord Chaitanya would sometimes dance wildly, not knowing either who he was or who were the others. At one moment, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would grasp a devotee's feet. And at the next moment, he would climb upon that same devotee's head. He would be in the mood of servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. And he would grasp the devotee. And then his mood would shift. And he was the Supreme Lord. And he would stand on the devotee's head. At one moment he would approach someone, embrace him, and weep. And at the next moment he would climb on that same devotee's shoulders. Sometimes he would act like a restless child and imitate the sounds of musical instruments. He would make his feet dance, and then he would laugh mischievously. Then, thinking himself a child, he would crawl on his knees. For 3 hours, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu once assumed the fold, the posture of threefold bending, handsome Krishna. enwrapped in meditation. At that time the Lord began to play his flute, and thus he revealed the truth that he was Krishna himself, Vrindavan Chandra, the moon of Vrindavan. And then regaining external consciousness, he would again think himself a servant of Krishna. He would weep. He would place a blade of grass between his teeth. He yearned to serve all the Vaishnavas. And once, bending his body like a circle, he made his head touch his feet, and he stayed in that position for 3 hours. He loudly roared, his limbs would tremble, he could not stay still, he fell to the ground. His usual normal complexion was fair, and then moment to moment his complexion would change into different colors, and before the devotees' eyes his form appeared double. And thinking himself a devotee, he would see a Vaishnava, and he would call in the mood of a devotee, "O Prabhu," and then he would grab him by the hair and announce, "He is my servant." And seeing a Vaishnava whose feet he previously would grasp, the Lord would push his own feet onto the Vaishnava's chest. And in the middle of this, all the devotees were crying, and they were dancing and chanting in ecstasy, and the mood was thick with sweetness and ecstasy. And the devotees, they would place their arms on each other's necks, and they would weep and weep and weep. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would dance with Nityananda, and the devotees could hear the charming sound that comes from the soles of their dancing feet hitting the earth. Their heels would hit the earth as they danced. And they would give the Lord a flower garland, and he would break it into pieces and throw the flowers at the devotee's feet. And sometimes he would manifest a forearm form holding a conch disc, club, and lotus. And then he would roll in the dust in a different mood and weep. His symptoms of ecstasy had no end. So this type of incredible dancing, what was going on before Lord Jagannath at the Rath Yatra, but his mood, Mahaprabhu's mood, was becoming still more and more and more intense, because he was beginning to assume the mood of Srimati Radharani, feeling separation from Krishna at Kurukshetra. So the ecstasy was increasing still further. So while this was going on, and we heard the pastime of Maharaj Pratyaparudra watching Mahaprabhu's dancing, and the saliva and the mucus was flowing from Mahaprabhu, and that doubt came to his heart. And therefore Mahaprabhu came to him in that dream with Jagannath and removed the doubt. And then he went and took full shelter of Mahaprabhu, understanding he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Mahaprabhu told him, "Don't tell anyone about this, who I am." So watching that, there was that dancing of Mahaprabhu, and Mahaprabhu falling to the ground, sometimes falling into the hands of Nityananda Prabhu, violently falling to the ground, sometimes becoming stunned. So there were three circles of devotees protecting Mahaprabhu while he was dancing in this ecstasy. So that is the point we're up to now. And this is what verse? Okay, the dancing increases still more, but let's stay in the order. 88. Just to check the crowd from coming too near, they formed three circles. The first circle was guided by Nityananda Prabhu, who was Balaram himself, the possessor of great strength. All the devotees headed by Kashishwar and Govinda, linked hands and form the second circle around the Lord. Maharaj Prataparudra and his personal assistants form the third circle around the two inner circles, just to check the crowd from coming too near. With his hands on the shoulders of Hari Chandan, who is his personal assistant, King Prataparudra could see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dancing, and the king felt great ecstasy because Mahaprabhu's ecstasy was so great that anyone who saw it would experience that ecstasy. What to speak of the pure devotees like Maharaj Prataparudra. So while the king beheld the dancing, Srivas Thakur, standing in front of him, became ecstatic as he saw the dancing of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Seeing Srivas Thakur standing before the king, right in front of him, blocking the king's vision, the personal associate, personal assistant of the king, Harichandan, he touched Srivas with his hand and requested him to move aside, move out of the way. After all, he was the king. Absorbed in watching Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dance, Srivas Thakur could not understand why he was being touched and pushed. After he was pushed again and again, he became angry. Srivas Thakur turned around and slapped Hari Chandan to stop him from pushing him. In turn, this made Hari Chandan angry. As the angered Hari Chandan was about to speak to the Srivas Thakur, and who knows what would have been next, Prataparudra Maharaj personally stopped him. And King Prataparudra said, "You are very fortunate, for you have been graced by the touch of Srivas Thakur. I am not so fortunate. You should feel obliged to him." And herein is where we'll stop in the reading, to bring us to a point that comes directly from the desire to become the servant of the servant of the servant, Gopi Bharta Parakamalayor, Dasa Dasana Das. When we hear about the glories of being the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant, we think, "Oh yes, I too want to become the servant of 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 the servant." And then, what happens? Why are we unable to do that? Because that is the mood, and that is the way to please Krishna, and that is the way to enter into Goloka Vrindavan. Again, no false ego allowed. But this tendency, as Prabhupada said in that lecture, the desire to become the servant of the servant of the servant is exactly in opposition to the conditioned soul, conditioned by false ego, his tendency to become the master of the master of the master of the master. False ego wants us, it forces us to become master in master consciousness. And devotional service, devoid of false ego, pushes us to become servant. And the two cannot exist simultaneously. So a typical, very typical experience that we have that reminds us that we are not pure souls, but rather we have extremely large, still have extremely large false egos, is just what happened to Hari Chandan. We're doing something. What was his service? He was the personal assistant of the king. So in the mood, sincerely trying to serve as devotees, what happens? In this case, there was Srivas Thakur, who had no false ego, and of course in the Leela we'll take it that there was no false ego on anyone's part, but just someone trying to do their service, and then another devotee slaps them in one way or another. And all our one can say pretension when that happens, of being the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant, because we're trying to do it, but we can't do it yet, because we still are under the control of the false ego, of the mind, of the modes of material nature. The attempt to be the servant of the servant of the servant is extremely noble. And Krishna so kindly will always send a slap to us in one form or another, so that we can watch how we react to that, and watch our false ego immediately rear its head up. How dare you slap me? Don't you know who I am? Immediately, who am I? Mahaprabhu is saying, Gopi Bharta Parakamalayo Adasa Dasana 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 Dasana, the most insignificant, lowly beggar, servant, 1/10,000. It just doesn't work. The false ego rears up. And sometimes when we become angry, we should try that. We should say, don't you know who I am? I'm an insignificant 1/10,000th head of a hair in size. It doesn't work. The two cannot exist. And which one gets blocked out by the mode of passion and ignorance? It's that I'm insignificant, and the master consciousness rolls right up, and I'm angry, and how dare you do this to me? I'll show you who I am. I'll show you my power. You'll see. You'll see. This slapping, the stick, the agent may be someone who has his own problems and false ego to deal with. But the stick is ultimately wielded by Krishna. It is Krishna teaching us that we still have some distance to go before we are allowed to enter into Braja. And I found, when I was looking at this, I found how interesting all these lessons to introduce the most intimate topic of Mahaprabhu's dancing at Rathiyatra, which is where he's opening up his heart, his internal bhava, and he's going to show the purest of the purest of the purest, spiritually pure mood of Srimati Radharani in relationship with Krishna. To hear this, because we can always skip over these parts. We have to learn this purifying process of first, and it's so interesting to note that the first part of the purifying process that we learned was that Maharaj Pratyapuruja was sweeping the road as a menial servant, and then Mahaprabhu, and he gained Mahaprabhu's mercy in that way, and the final benediction that Mahaprabhu is asking for is that very thing. All I want is to be the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of Gopi Bharta, of he who is maintaining the gopis and he who the gopis maintain. I want that. I don't want to be in this master consciousness controlled by false ego. And what is our test of how much we've gained this? Prabhupada said, this consciousness, he said, how much we're in the mood, how much lust occupies our heart and mind, how much we still have the calm, the desires for the material world, and we're in that master lording it over mood, that the material energy is meant for my pleasure. And the other test is this test of chastisement. How do we react when we're chastised? So I would like to speak about that some. And this was, I had an entire class on this, but we'll go over it quite quickly so that we can go to the next lesson, the next part of the pastime of Mahaprabhu. Because the illusioned soul wants to become the master of the master, and because we tend to cling to that identity of master, which means false ego, real, it means we invest that sense of identity, of I am. Ego means the sense of I am. And we invest it into so many master relationships. And Mahaprabhu says, only Kintu Pradyan Nikala Paramananda Punamritam there. I only invest my sense of self, of who I am, into the serving mood towards Krishna. Because we tend to cling to that and to the false ego master. It's so subtle. And when Satchinandan Raj read last night that Maya was initiated one time by Lord Shiva in this way, and then one time in the Ram Mantra, and then one time by Haridas Thakur into the Krishna Mantra, and then the third time into the Gauranga Mantra, and she's well initiated, and therefore she can enter into the society of gopis. And I heard all the devotees, including myself, laugh, because Maya, yes, Maya too can enter into the association of devotees. And this is what it means, that we cling to false ego. One time in Japan, there was one devotee who was in Hong Kong, Sudama Vipra. He was there, a sannyasi. And he wanted to go to preach in the Philippines. And he wanted to go alone. And I didn't think it was a good idea that he goes there alone, a sannyasi alone. Too risky. And the Philippines can be a dangerous place sometimes. So I suggested to Prabhupada that someone go with him. And the person I suggested wasn't practical. And then while we were walking one day in the morning, Prabhupada said, why, maybe this other devotee who was also a sannyasi, very strong person, he can go with Sudama Vipra Swami to the Philippines. And I knew both devotees very well, and both sannyasis were very, very, very strong. And so Prabhupada said to me, what do you think? So he asked me what I thought, so I said, I don't think it would work. And he said, why? And I said, I was trying to think of how to say it in a polite, gentlemanly way. And I said, I think they would have trouble deciding who would surrender to who. And Prabhupada just looked at me and said, it doesn't make any difference who surrenders to who. Very easy to follow, as long as you have no false ego. And this is the issue. We tend, even in the society of devotees, to cling to false ego, false identity. Because the mind, and because of that, when the mind is chastised, when we are chastised, the mind hates it. It hates it. It rebels. It rears up. It tends to do this. It rears up. And what does it strike back as? It finds fault. I know very well about this one, unfortunately. So therefore, for the purpose of purification, for the purpose of making us aware of that thing that will in fact stop us from entering into Goloka Vrindavan, meaning the false ego, that part of entering in. Krishna is so kind that he continuously arranges us for us to be chastised. Whether we like it or we don't, he continuously arranges chastisements. Chastisements come from the universe. The universe is forever chastising us. Have you noticed this? I notice it all the time at this point in my life. Its chastisements come in the form of my knee, my teeth, my eyes, my lack of hair, my pain here, the fact that I want to do something and then it's so difficult to do it, this problem, that problem, even you try to do some service and there's a financial problem, there's this problem, there's so many problems. So unlimited, the weather is too hot, it's too cold. We could go on and on. All we have to do is the music's too loud, the microphone doesn't work, the speakers are too small. Continuously, one thing after the next, you try to do something in the material world, it just, whether you're a devotee, the material energy chastises continuously. And what is the point of the chastisement? You are not in control. One time, I was there was one young lady who, she was little and then she grew into be a young lady who was coming to the Perth temple because her mother was coming. And one day she was wearing this funny little dress. When she was just blossoming into being young, and she was wearing this very, very funny crinoline type of dress. So I said to her, "You look pretty good in that dress." And she looked at me, she turned to me and looked at me and said, "Get real birds on." And this is the point.
What did she want to express with this?
Oh, sorry. Be realistic about your assessment of my situation in the dress. She knew that she didn't look so beautiful like that. But she really did say that. And she really did say, "Get real, Burijan." It's slang, but it's very contemporary slang. Face reality. So that is what the universe is continuously saying to us. Get real. Face reality. You are only tiny and insignificant. And it can never be anything other than that. You like it, you don't like it, it doesn't have anything to do with reality. Get real. You're insignificant. You're going to die. And there are millions, literally 6 billion other living entities who think themselves the center also. It's not only you who is the center of the universe. And the struggle of existence is just that. Trying to convince the rest of the universe that you are the center, and it doesn't work. So therefore, Krishna kindly to teach, to get us real, to face reality as it is, to teach us our foolishness, to teach us our insignificance, to teach us humility, to remove our pride. There is that saying, I think it comes from the Bible, that pride goeth before destruction. Be careful of pride and a haughty spirit. Haughty means proud spirit, arrogant spirit before a fall. Beware of pride. Get real. We are insignificant. Therefore, Krishna, out of his kindness, chastises us. Through the universe And the Guru chastises us despite the fact, and the Vaishnavas may chastise us despite the fact that the mind hates it. It finds it the most distasteful thing, chastisements. Still, it will come. And still the same purpose is there, to teach us humility. It's a tricky subject, because sometimes humbly we may have to do one thing or another. Sometimes we have to humbly stand up and say, no, it's not like that. But the point is that we have to become humble, one way or another. So, we heard in the Japa retreat about the Avanti Brahman. And there are so many things that we can hear about having to become humble and how to see the chastisements of the universe. I'll read just four simple ones. Good advice from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. That person, just four very short ones. That person is entitled to the attainment of the service of the feet of Godhead, who is the Redeemer from worldly bondage, who lives by submitting to Him with heart, speech, and body, and realizing by His good vision, Krishna's mercy is there in the sufferings that have come to Him due to His own misdeeds. There is no other way from being delivered to this world, from being delivered from this world. Whatever Godhead does is for our good. These instructions are what we have to tell our mind when it rears up in anger, when the universe has failed to cooperate according to our desires. Whatever Godhead does is for our good. Please listen to this. We can be redeemed if we behold His mercy. What does redeemed mean?
Saved,
re-uplifted, brought to our actual position. If, conditional expression, we can be redeemed, but if we behold His mercy in every event and in every activity, if we notice any defect in His works or realize any cruelty, it is sure to result in evil and difficulty. All my difficulty is due to the fact that I happen to be engrossed in activities other than the service of Krishna. If taste for the service of Krishna really increased within me day by day, if it does, I shall indeed be blessed. That is all that is to be gained. The darling son, this is the preaching to the mind when it starts rearing up. How dare you do this to me? Don't you know who I am? The darling son of Sri Nanda, who is the sole object of worship by means of his centripetal attraction, by his fully attractive nature, has kept the attracted so effectively drawn towards himself, they do not experience any other desire. This is Krishna consciousness. Such mood of service is the only natural function of the soul. Everything other than full attraction to Krishna is a product of Maya, and combining with its willful collaborator, the false ego. I would like to read some words of Prabhupada. They are very, very nice. And the last one, this is all on chastisement. Words of Prabhupada. This is a letter, a lecture from Prabhupada in Mayapur in 1976. Just like a father. This is the meaning of Krishna's chastisements and the Guru's chastisements and the Vaishnava's chastisements. This is what's behind it. Just like a father, if he chastises his son, it is not chastisement, it is favor. The devotees can understand that even sometimes we meet very reverse conditions of life. It is also favor. So this is why this is why Maharaj Prataparuja said this is the greatest fortune that Srivast Thakur has chastised you. Anyone who can see that this unfavorable condition of life is also another favor of Krishna, tateyanu kampamsu samikshamano, even if there is some suffering. It is not given by Krishna. I'm suffering on account of my past misdeeds. And Krishna is so kind that I would have suffered many hundreds, thousands times more than this present suffering. But Krishna is adjusting the whole thing by a little suffering. This is the vision of devotee. Tateyanu kampam susamikshamano bunjane vatma kripavapakam atmakritam vipakam. A devotee never accuses Krishna. Krishna, I'm serving you so nicely and you are giving me so much suffering. No, that is not a devotee's view. Devotee will take this so-called suffering as also Krishna's favor. Tateyanu kampam susamikshamano. So those who are going forward with Krishna consciousness, they should not be, a debtor to any condition of life. This is from Prabhupada's words about the prayers of King Kulashekar. A father is naturally inclined to act for the good of his son. And when the father chastises his son, that chastisement is also mixed with affection. So we need to see that in all difficulties, that it is mixed with Krishna's affection. Another type of chastisement, Krishna to devotee, or guru to disciple. Prabhupada, conversation regarding with David Hume. God is absolute. For him there is no evil, absolute good. Otherwise he cannot be absolute. So what you think evil is, to God, it is good. Just like a father slaps a child and he cries. For the child, it is evil. But for the father, it is good. The father thinks, I have done right. He is crying. He will not commit the mistake again. So this chastisement is just, and then he says, just sometimes my servant, Aravinda, he complains. He thinks, I was unnecessarily chastised. But I say, it is good. And then Prabhupada laughs. The same thing. So whose opinion is to be taken? And here is the duty of the spiritual master is to chastise the disciple for his rectification. A letter. 1974. I know you are working hard and sincerely. This is to Bhavananda and Jayapataka. I have no business to criticize you, but as head of the institution, or as your spiritual master, it is my duty to find out your faults. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu presented himself as faulty before his spiritual master. To remain faulty before the spiritual master is a good qualification, so he is subjected to rectification. But if he thinks he is all perfect, then there is no scope for rectification. So don't be sorry when I find fault. That is my primary duty. Chanakya Pandit says, one must find fault with disciples and sons. It is good for them. This I entitled, The Guru Chastises the Disciple Any Way He Wants. Your third question, why does Sri Narada Muni condemn Srila Vyasadeva for compiling the Vedic scriptures? Sri Narada Muni was the spiritual master of Srila Vyasadeva. A spiritual master has the right to chastise his disciple any way he likes. A shishya or a disciple means one who accepts the disciplinary action given by the spiritual master. Even although sometimes a spiritual master chastises his disciple as a fool or as a rascal, in a fatherly affection, it does not mean necessarily that the disciple is a fool or a rascal. You will find even in the statement of Lord Chaitanya, he presents himself as a fool designated by his spiritual master. That does not mean he was a fool. A sincere disciple feels it pleasurable when his spiritual master chastises him with calling him such names as fool and rascal. My spiritual master sometimes called me in that way, and I remember that day always, and I feel transcendental pleasure. Another title of this one is Guru Chastises Disciple Out of Love. So far, my chastising you at Mayapur for your questions is simply out of love that I chastise any of my students. It's a father's duty to raise his son to be a strong, useful citizen, and sometimes he must reprimand him for some mistake in order to teach him. But this harshness is only for the son's benefit. Similarly, you are all my spiritual children. My only concern is to see that you become strong in your devotion to Krishna. So sometimes scolding may be there, but you should always remember that it is done with love, and it is only for your benefit. You are an intelligent boy, and I want to train you very nicely so that you'll be able to preach this great Krishna consciousness philosophy with conviction, and to help to deliver all the spiritually starving souls in this age. Therefore, you should take this chastisement as an opportunity to advance in Krishna consciousness, and not any other way. And here's the follow-up letter after that devotee replied to Prabhupada. Please accept my blessings. I beg to acknowledge receipt of your letter, and I have noted the contents. I'm glad to know that your confusion has been cleared up and you have understood the reason for my scolding you. This is my duty. This is the duty of the father or spiritual master to simply chastise. By this chastisement, the disciple can realize his mistakes and become strong and fixed up in devotional service. And another one. There is another story, it may be fact, that a boy was raised by his aunt very liberally. Then gradually, the boy became, due to bad association, a thief. And the aunt was encouraging. Oh, it is very good business. You're bringing so many things without any labor. So, or out of affection, she did not chastise the boy when he was stealing. Then he, at the end, became a murderer. So he committed a murder. Then he was to be hanged. So the government men inquired, "What is your last wish?" "Now I want to speak with my aunt through the ear." Then he was allowed. And the aunt was generally crying, My nephew is going to be hanged." She was crying. So he caught up her ear with his teeth and cut it. And he said, "My dear aunt, if you would have chastised me in the beginning, then today this position that you are crying and I'm going to be hanged, this would not have had happened. But you did not do that. Therefore you are uselessly crying now, and this is your punishment. I cut off your ear with the teeth." A very good instruction, Prabhupada said. So the so-called sneha, if it is not properly done, affection, nature's regulation is so strict that you cannot avoid the consequence. That is not possible. These are practical advices. I have seen another practical one. In front of our residence, there was another neighbor. So the old man had his daughter-in-law. So she was beating her one child. So I inquired through my servant why this young woman is beating her child. Now, the servant brought me the news that this boy gave paratha to his elder brother who was suffering from typhoid. He asked his younger brother, "If you steal one paratha and if you'll give it to me, I will be very much pleased because I'm very hungry." So the young boy became sympathetic to his brother and he gave the paratha. And the boy was ill and it aggravated the illness and he almost died. So as soon as the mother heard that he gave a paratha to him, she began to beat him. "Why did you give it to him?" Now it was charity. It was with affection and sympathy. But the result was beating with shoes. So if we do not know where charity should be given, then we don't know where affection should be given, then we are under the laws of nature, and we shall be punished if it is not properly done. There will be punishment. And the last one in this section, and then Adi, could you give me that paper that you just printed, and then we'll end. Yeah. And this really brings it together on chastisement and how we can actually become Gopi Bharta Parakamalayo Dasa Dasana Das. We cannot do it with our willpower, with our intelligence. This is Prabhupada speaking in a talk about Arthur Schopenhauer, the German philosopher of the 1850s, I believe. Yes, Prabhupada says, without love, nothing can sustain. If I do not love Krishna, I cannot surrender. It is not possible. Just like a small child, he is naturally surrendered to the parents because there is love. The child loves the parents. So without the basic principle of love, the more you love, the more you surrender is also perfect. Just like a small child, you slap the child. He's crying. Yet, he's crying also with the words, Mommy, 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 because there is love. Even in distress, the child cannot forget. That is natural. Similarly, when you remain fully surrendered to the Supreme Will, either in distress or in happiness, that is your happiness. That is real happiness. This condition cannot be without love. When there is lack of love, in any condition you remain surrendered, it cannot be done without love. When there is lack of love, this kind of mentality cannot develop. In any condition, I shall remain surrendered. Just like you are, a whole society is carrying my order. Not because I'm a superior person, but because there is love. Without love, you cannot do so. You have got some bit of love for me, therefore you carry out my order. Otherwise it is not possible. And also I cannot, you are foreigners, you are Americans, I come from another country, I have no account, I cannot order you, you must do it, otherwise I will chastise you. But because there is love, it is a connection of love. I can also, because of that, I can also become bold enough to chastise you. But you also, what, in ever condition, you carry out my order due to the basic principle of love. And our whole philosophy is love. We are just trying to learn how to love Krishna. That's all. So without the basic principle of love, these things cannot be conceived. Wonderful, wonderful. And then, since I've squeezed two in, so I haven't squeezed so tightly. So, but this is the last thing. This is a lecture in Vrindavan. Oh no, this is the wrong one. The one that I had on the list. Yeah. Oh, it was so nice. It's all Adi Purush's fault. It was a lecture where Prabhupada explained. Someone asked Prabhupada. Prabhupada said he was talking about chastisement like this. And then someone said, were you ever chastised by your spiritual master? And then Prabhupada began to tell of the chastisement of what had happened. Yes, in Mayapur, I can't remember where it was. But Prabhupada was sitting, perhaps it was in Allahabad, perhaps, and there was an elder person there.
No, it was in Chaitanya Math in Sri Mayapur.
In Mayapur. Yeah. You can tell the story. Maharaj, give Maharaj the microphone. Does anyone have a computer here? No. Very good.
You're not going to bring it.
It was when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave a lecture. As far as I do remember, it was in the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Srila Mayapur. And Srila Prabhupada was present. He sat at the back. There was an older man who was a little hard of hearing. And the older man constantly, while the lecture was going on, requested Srila Prabhupada to say, what did he say? What did he say? This Prabhupada felt obliged to satisfy the inquisitiveness of that elderly gentleman who, due to old age, not impoliteness, due to his hearing defect, asked him about a summary of what was being told. So finally, after some time, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur interrupted his lecture and said, if you want to speak, you come here and you speak.
First, he said to the man, because the man had been giving some donations to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur as his disciple. So first he said, you think you've purchased me with your 500 rupee donation? Wow. And then he turned to Prabhupada and said what you said. So now you know everything? You don't have to listen anymore? Then you want to speak? Something like that. Wow. And then in the lecture that Prabhupada said, and he was describing how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was very fond of using heavy words like rascal and things like that. And he said, oh, he was very fond of using words like that. Which explains why Srila Prabhupada was so very fond of using those words. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.